Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and joining me on my left for today's very special episode of TCCP is none other than enterprising Northamptonshire County Cricket Club opener, Emilio Gay. So Emilio, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. How's your day been so far, mate?
Hi, mate. Yeah, good to be here. Pleasure. It's been good. Yeah, just a chilled day off. Had quite a lot of training this week, so today's a bit of a day off, just relaxing, you know, kind of recharging the batteries. But yeah, no, just, you know, at home, chilling, watching a bit of cricket. Obviously, the test match is going on right now and England in a great position, so that's good to see. But yeah, just watching that really and just kind of, like I said, recovering and, you know, getting my head away from cricket a little bit, but at the same time, it's always in the background because I'm watching the test, so I'm never fully away from it, I guess.
Well, it's the thing to do, isn't it, Emilio? It's the life, isn't it, I suppose? And of course, next week, heading into Super September, as we've got it here in England and Wales, the county championship does return. It's nice to have that little bit of space away, isn't it, before going into the county grind again?
100%. I think, you know, the thing about the season is it's pretty grueling, you know, mentally and physically. It does take its toll. Regardless of how old you are, how much you've played, games come thick and fast, and obviously changing between formats, it does get a lot. It is challenging. So when you get a week or two to kind of just take a step back, but also, you know, kind of use it as time to work on your game. For me, that's the massive thing, you know, going from formats to format. You always want that week or two to kind of just settle in and just kind of go back to the Red Bull stuff, go back to your processes, and kind of, you know, regroup those plans before you go again. So I think, you know, this last week has been really helpful, and hopefully, you know, that puts us in, you know, as a team in good stead for the next few games.
Absolutely, Emilio. Fingers crossed, of course, for North Ants. Yeah, a very, very busy month ahead of the East Midlands County. And of course, for all 18 counties, it is massive. The county championship is back. I personally cannot wait. Yeah. It is such a fantastic competition, and Super September should be absolutely blockbuster. I cannot wait to cover it all here on the podcast. But Emilio, before we get into this season, of course, we'll discuss that later on in more depth in today's episode. But before we get into all of that, I want to take you all the way back to the origin of your cricketing journey, mate. So what are your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching the game?
I think my first memories are my dad throwing balls at me in the garden when I was really young. We're talking, you know, 4 or 5 years of age. You know, that's as early as I can remember. And watching, you know, the West Indies play on TV, because my dad's from West Indian descent. So watching West Indies play, my idol growing up was always Dwayne Bravo. So, you know, watching him and the West Indies side was my youngest memories. And I think for me, I've said it a few times before, for me, the real turning point was going to the Caribbean in 2007 for the World Cup. I've got family out there, and we went to the World Cup. I met Bravo. I met Lara. And I also went to the World Cup, watched England, sorry, West Indies versus South Africa. And for me, as a seven-year-old, that was as good as it got. So, you know, that was a turning point. And that is, I remember that pretty well. And that's my earliest proper memory. And I think that's really what got me, you know, when I came back from that holiday, I got back to England. It was literally just an obsession of mine, you know, cricket. So, yeah, I think those are the most fond memories anyway.
Fair enough, Emilio. I mean, that is absolutely fantastic. 2007 World Cup. Yeah, what do you say was your favourite moment from that competition? I can certainly think of one involving a certain Bermudan called Dwayne Leverock.
Yeah. I can forget that. I think in terms of actual cricket, I went to one game. I didn't watch much of the game. I can't remember many of the games. I only went to one game. For me, meeting Bravo was the main thing. I wanted to meet Dwayne Bravo. I met him. He gave me a shirt. He used in the World Cup, signed it, you know, and also introduced me to Lara at the time, who actually, weirdly enough, I wasn't that interested in. I was more interested in Dwayne Bravo. I know. But for me, that was a big thing. And then going to the game, I actually don't remember much of the game. I remember West Indies getting pumped by South Africa. And I remember Jacques Callis bowling out Kieran Pollard and his off pole going miles out of the ground. And I remember watching that as a kid, thinking, like, this is awesome. Like, you know, I remember those little moments for me were yeah, probably what sticks. But I think you can't overlook Bravo, you know, giving me a signed shirt and meeting him. For me, like I said, as a 7-year-old, it doesn't get any better than that. So yeah, I'd probably say those two memories there.
Fair enough. I mean, great memories, absolutely fantastic memories. Yeah. And you've just mentioned four names there. We really have been lucky. I mean, we're a similar age, Emilio. Obviously, I haven't got the cricketing talent that you possess. I'm a lot better at talking about the game as opposed to playing it, as anyone who's seen me play will know. But we really have grown up in a fantastic generation. Mention four names there. The Prince, Brian Charles Lara, your idol Dwayne Bravo, Corin Pollard, and Jacques Callis. Kalahari, the GOAT all round, in my opinion. I mean, apart from Dwayne Bravo, who else were your idols growing up in the world of cricket? And I'm guessing that quite a few were all-rounders in those formative years.
From a cricket perspective, at that age, it was Bravo, mainly. It wasn't until I got a little bit older than I started, and Lara, as I got a bit older, Lara, naturally, but I was more interested in Bravo. It wasn't until I got older than I started batters became people I really looked up to. Joe Root, Ian Bell.
Great shout. Sanga
Akara, Virat Kohli, Steve Smith. And I'd go, and I'm talking older, you know, not ridiculously older, but 13, 14, 15, 16, I'd say. Those years, from 13 years of age, that's when I started to really look at these players and I actually just try to copy them. It was almost like every year I tried to be a different player. One year I tried to be Root, one year I tried to be Kohli, one year I tried to be Steve Smith. It was kind of like every year I'd just try and copy these players. And I think the weird thing for me, I've said this a few times, the weird thing for me is recently now I'm playing against these guys. I played against my debut, well, my first ever bat in first class cricket last year, because my debut got washed out, was against Warwickshire and Ian Bell was the second slip. And I remember him... my shoelace is undone, I think. And he said, Emilio, your shoelace is undone. And I remember him saying my name. And I was like, Ian Bell just said my name. And for me, like, I've grown up. This guy's been my idol. And he's telling me my shoelace is undone. And he knows my name. And I remember standing there at Edgbaston, like, wow, that's quite a big thing. It's almost like weird playing against these guys now. We played against Marnus Labuschagne a few weeks ago. And he's now currently my... You know, him and Steve Smith and Kohli for me are the guys that I really look up to. So we're now playing against these guys and it's a bit surreal. You know, one day you're watching them on TV as a kid and now you're playing against them, trying to get them out or trying to score runs against them, etc. So, you know, it's a new experience, but it's all it's nice anyway.
Well, exactly. It is. If you're an absolute cricket badger and as you said, you've grown up idolising and adoring these people, of course it's going to be surreal. And Emilio, I did just want to ask this because... when you think of this season as well, County Championship Division 3, there's some massive names, not just county names, but international calibre players in that division, of course, in the North Group as well, and last year in the Bob Willis Trophy Central Group. There are a lot of big names in the county circuit. Do you ever almost pinch yourself and feel as though, am I actually here playing against these guys?
I wouldn't say I do that with players. So when I played against these people, I wouldn't say I've done that. I feel like I've occasionally come across a bowler and, or a batter or anyone really. And wow, you know, so we play against Ashim Amla, for example, at the Oval. And I'm like, oh, flipping it, that's Amla. Like, but I don't pinch myself and go, oh, you know, can I believe I'm here? I don't do that. I think I have done that when I've played at grounds, I think. So I remember, I think I was at the Oval a couple of months ago. I think it was the Oval. I got washed out. And we were at the Oval and I was going out to like just do my routines and I was looking around. It was quite full, the ground. Well, there was quite a lot of people there. And I'm just looking around at the Oval. It was the first time I've been at the Oval and I was thinking, wow, this is pretty cool. Like, and I just had that moment where you said I'd kind of almost had to pinch myself and go, you know, this is what it's about. So yeah, I think I do that. But with players, I try not to, because for me it's like, it's a dangerous road because you've got to play against them, get them out, score against them. If I'm playing against Jimmy Anderson and I'm like, wow, that's Jimmy Anderson and I need to pinch myself, but I need to score runs against him and I need to believe that I'm better than him in that case, on that day. So that for me is a dangerous road to go down. I think for me, it's more about playing in front of crowds and in certain grounds where I go, like, wow, this is brilliant. Let's lap it up, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, Emilio. And I must admit, I like that mentality. I like that approach. I really do. Of course, not getting starstruck, not getting caught up in the moment. Just, as you said, going out there, showing that self-belief, that confidence that has obviously got you to this point in the first place. No, I quite like that.
Yeah.
I must admit, I wish I had that confidence in my batting and bowling personally. But of course, that is why you're playing first-class cricket and I'm sat here on a podcast playing village cricket week in, week out, isn't it?
As long as you're enjoying it, that's the main thing.
Yeah, exactly. 100%, mate. 100%. But this is something that I really wanted to ask, actually, because so far, Emilio, we've spoken a lot about your batting. And of course, we'll talk more about that as today's podcast progresses. But I remember on a video, I think this was from 2020, where you said that you started off life as a bowler, or an all-rounder at least, and then the batting has come later. Right.
Yeah.
Where did that switch come from? How did you all of a sudden, what's the spark that almost made you into that specialist batsman? Where did that come from in the first place, per se?
I get asked this quite a lot, actually. I was a bowler. Well, I did classify myself as a bowler. I did start as a bowler, and I think it started because I had this desire to just play cricket, but train and be the best I could be. And for me, I just going to nets and bowling by myself, I never had that like passion. I've always felt I was a naturally good bowler, but I never had that passion to bowl. First of all, you can't bowl all day. You just can't. Like, you know, no matter how young you are, you can't just run up and bowl all day. You'll get knackered. But I just didn't have that desire as much to go to the nets and bowl. I fell in love with just hitting cricket balls. It might sound weird, but I just loved it. Was me and my dad would go to the nets for hours and he'd throw balls. And I just loved, because my idols were batsmen. You know, I said about Bravo, but when I got to the stage where I became more of a batter, like 12 years old, 13, the guys would come to a batters, and I just loved just watching Root get under and then going to the nets and trying to bat like Root. And for me, it was just batting all day in the nets. That is just what I absolutely loved, where I wanted to be. On a Sunday, I wanted to be there. On a Friday, I wanted to be there. At 10 o'clock at night, I just wanted to be there all the time. I had no interest in anything else. And for me, that's what gave me joy as a kid, batting, just batting and batting. And then later on, bearing in mind, I still wasn't all-rounder at this point. Later on, at 17, this was kind of a crunch point for me. I went to Dubai on pre-season tour with Bedford School. And I got a stress fracture from bowling. And I came back. I remember the first game I played for Bedford School at 100. And I was on about 120 or whatever, 110. And my back just, it was already sore and it just went. I had to get carried off the pitch. And I was out for the season. And I remember thinking, you know, I've just, an important season at 17, you know, you're trying to turn pro at some point. And for me, it was quite an important year. Just got into the academy at Northants. And I missed the whole year basically from my bowling. And in my head, I was like, you know, I don't want this to happen again. Because, you know, I'm not going to get injured from batting, but I could get injured from bowling. And it's affecting my batting now. It's also affecting my chance of turning pro. So that, I think, is the moment when I kind of put bowling aside for a couple of seasons and go, look, just be the best batter you can become, score loads of runs, and everything else will take care of itself.
And it certainly has. I think it is safe to say, Emilio, that was the right decision. As we will be discussing in today's podcast, because, I mean, to be honest, it's such an interesting journey, though, because usually you see, I suppose spinners actually do become batsmen. Kevin Peterson is a good example of this. He started off life as an off spinner in Natal, and then, of course, he developed a love for batting. But it's not often that you see someone go from being a seamer, and of course a pretty talented seamer, to becoming a batsman at a later age and then really taking a proficiency for the art of batting. It is interesting. It is very, very interesting. But as I said, it's definitely paid off, hasn't it, mate?
Yeah, I agree. I 100% agree. Yeah, it has paid off. For me, I just think whatever you want to do, I think, you know, I always believe whatever the mind can achieve. I do believe that. And I think regardless of, you know, you could be 16 or 13. I didn't come into batting ridiculously late, but it was just purely, right, I'm a bowler at this point in time, or more of a bowler. I want to become the best batter I possibly can be. there are plenty of people ahead of me. I was aware of that. I've always been a cocky kid. I've always backed myself. But I knew at 14, 15, there were better kids than me. And it was like, okay, well, you might be better than me now, but that's not when the chips are on the table, really. You know, no one's giving contracts out at 14 years of age. So if you put in work every single day, you know, other kids at that time were doing 3 hours a week, you know, or 4 hours a week, you know, two sessions a week. I was doing 3 hours a day, 2 hours a day, every day without fail. And it was like, if I keep doing this, I don't care how talented they are. It's just maths. It's going to, yeah. I'm going to surpass them. I really don't believe there's ceilings for people's abilities. I just don't believe in that. So I was like, if I keep batting here every day, I'm going to pass them. And that's how I felt. And so far it's worked, but obviously I'm aware that there's a lot more to come and a lot more I need to do. But for me, that's always been how I've gone about my business anyway.
Well, I'll tell you what, Emilio, it's a nice way to go about it though, isn't it? Shows that you've got good hard work ethic, I suppose. It shows that you're willing to put in the time, the grind, the hours. And again, this is the stuff that we as fans and supporters of cricket teams don't see, isn't it? It's the hours spent away. It's the sacrifice. It is the proverbial blood, sweat and tears. And obviously, mate, you've put in absolutely hours. I mean, obviously, you can't give an approximation, but just for any North Ants fans out there, how many hours do you think you've put into your batting over the years?
Oh, wow.
Be a lot, won't it?
There's a rule. I'm not sure if you've heard it, of the 10,000 hour rule.
Yep.
Master something. Or necessarily master, if you want to turn professional or something or make it your job or whatever, there's this 10,000 hour rule. You put 10,000 hours in. And I would comfortably say I've passed that, I think, already. It's hard to say, but I can't round it up. I actually said to my dad not long ago, actually, where did you say that? About a month ago, I reckon I said to him, I would love to know how many hours because 80% of the work is with my dad, was with my dad. But to put it into a simple term, as you said, for fans watching or whatever, I think if you can think from the age of 12 years old, 11 years old, until I'm 21, it's been an everyday process, literally an everyday process. And I mean, every day. I mean, you know, with the exception of Christmas Day and Boxing Day, pretty much. And
that's pretty much it.
No, I'm at the Nets on my birthday without fail.
Good luck.
For sure. Yeah. It's really, and I mean, it really is, it's been every day. So if you look at the last 12 years, it's been hours and hours and hours and hours. And that's just not even, that's training, but I've had games, I've got hundreds, and I've walked straight to the Nets and gone again. So it really, it's been so many hours. I have no idea how many I've done, but it's been a lot. And anyone that knows me knows that. And that's a credit to my parents, my dad, massive testament to him, because he's been there throwing balls at me. He's sacrificed so much time to throw balls at me. So, you know, that it's been a team thing. It's not just for me, it's for me, my mom, my dad. It's been a team thing. It's been a team effort. It's been an everyday process, an obsession for years.
Well, yeah, it certainly sounds like it. But again, you can see all of that effort, that hard work, that dedication to mastering the art of batting is definitely paying off, Emilio. And 21 years of age, we've already seen your progression. I'll mention it when we get to our North Ants section. But honestly, the sky really is the limit with your batting. At least that's what we see here at TCCP. Because, I mean, your evolution, even from 2019 to 2021, is staggering. It really is. And we'll talk about your maiden first-class century, because I feel like we do have to talk about that at some point in today's episode, because that was a cracking knock, mate. It really was. It made our review show for the county championship. That's how much myself and Joe absolutely loved it. But before we get into that, talking of county cricket, Emilio, I want to just take you back slightly further back in time, right? What were your first memories of county cricket? Because you mentioned already about Bedfordshire, of course, a national county here in England and Wales. Would you say they were your, I don't know, your formative memories of county cricket? Or were you into the first-class counties as well?
Are you talking about age group stuff or men's?
Everything in general. Age group, watching it, attending games, pretty much just everything county cricket.
As a youngster, I never really looked at county cricket like first class stuff. You know, at 12, I never looked, or 14, I never really knew like county cricketers, or I only really knew the international stuff. It wasn't until I got older I started paying attention to county championship, Vitality Blast, etc. But my memories are playing for Bedfordshire. I remember trialing at 7 for the under 11s, and I was too young, got into the district, and I got in the next year at 8. So I was at Bedfordshire for a good 6 years, and then moved to Northants and got into the EPP, and I went from there to the academy. So those are that's where I went. That was my route. And I remember well, it was a story actually. There's a coach called Will Sneath, who told me, I'd say about a year ago, we had a chat, and he said that he remembered me walking at 7 years old to the under 11s practice, thinking, who the hell is this guy? Thinking he owns the place. And I said to him, that sounds exactly like me. You know, I was 7 years old, I walked in, and he looked at the 7 year old, and he was like, who's this guy? Like, thinking he owns the place. He's 7. And, you know, I think that sums up where I was at the time. But yeah, so it was Bedfordshire, playing for Bedfordshire. And then I wanted to turn pro. And I was like, how can I turn pro? Right, you need to go to a major county, is what I was told. At 12, I got told that. So I scored a few more runs. And at 14, I moved to Northants, was in their EPP. And then on there, it was just, how can I get into the academy? And then I got into the academy by scoring runs. And then from there, it was how can I score runs in second team cricket and vice versa. It just went like that. It was just each goal by goal kind of thing. I was never looking too far ahead. It was just, how can I get into Bedfordshire's EPP? How can I score runs at under 14s Bedfordshire? How can I get into the EPP at Northants? How can I get into the academy? It was one of those. So yeah, I think that was my journey. You know, I didn't go to any... I didn't do any trialing at other counties. It was always Northants. So yeah, that I think that's the route I took, and I'm glad I took that route, because it was I met some really cool people along the way, and some great coaches. And I like the fact that I've been at Northants, you know, since 14, 15 years of age. I like that, because it's a local county for me, pretty much, isn't it? It's only an hour away from Bedford. So yeah, that was the route anyway.
Well, I'll tell you what, Emilio, again, it's a very, very nice journey into county cricket. It really is. And as you said, staying with that one county, your boyhood county, I suppose, when you think about it, from your teenage years, and of course now representing them across all three formats in 2021. Life's funny, isn't it? It really, really is how life works out sometimes. But in terms of Northants as a county, because you would have gone from playing from Bedfordshire, national county, still a big county here in England and Wales, but to go from national county level to first class county level, what were your first impressions of Northamptonshire as a club?
When I joined at 15, for me it was tough actually. I had a really bad year. I was in the EPP, I've been brought in, and I remember coming in, everyone thinking, right, it was a lot of eyes on me from teammates thinking, you know, this guy is the guy that's come in, he's supposedly our jet, he's our gun, he's the guy that's going to score loads of runs. I never really saw the professionals. I never even saw really anyone at the top. You know, it was always, I saw the academy, but I was so young. You never really got to see the professionals. I initially went to watch a game, but I never did because I was always have games myself. But I had a terrible year, first year. So to answer your question, I saw Northants as a big county, as an opportunity, but at the same time, I was struggling. I was scoring so many runs at school, I'll never forget it. And I couldn't score a bean for Northants. And then I trialled for Banbury. And I would say that probably the greatest thing that ever happened to me on my cricketing journey life happened, and I didn't get into Banbury, which was a blessing, to say the least. I remember not getting in. I remember my mum telling me the news as a cocky kid at 15, thinking he's the best thing. And I remember crying when I found out the news. And that really fired me up. And I went from having a terrible year at Northants, and I think it was 4 games left of the season, and I banged 300 for Northants, under 15s, in the EPP. And I remember that really, I went from, you know, averaging about 20 to 15. Didn't get to Bunbury. My last few games, I dominated because I just wanted to prove everyone wrong. And as soon as that happened, that was kind of never looking back. I then scored some runs at 16, and I got into the academy. And when I got into the academy, I think that's when I really saw a difference in professionalism, in it being a major county. We started training occasionally with the professionals. The idea of second team cricket was around as well, which was quite a big thing. So it was kind of like, I think until I got, it wasn't until I got into the academy, I really realised the magnitude of what I was in and how tough it would be and the standards Northampton set compared to a minor county, I think.
Indeed. And Emilio, as you said it there, sometimes, not just in cricket, but in life, you do need that leveler, don't you? You just need that thing, almost the wake-up call, shall we call it. It's the one that does ignite the fire in the belly. And of course, that is very, very interesting. I didn't know that, to be honest. I didn't know that that was the catalyst, I suppose, behind your rise with Northants. Yeah. But again, we mention it, life finds a way, doesn't it? And you just, without that, who knows? Who knows where your cricketing journey would have ended up?
Exactly, yeah. And it comes back to, you know, just being really resilient. And you always could get adversity come your way. It's about how can you get back up? That brilliant Michael Jordan quote about he's missed how many shots in his life and et cetera. He's been, you know, called upon to win the game so many times and missed. And that's why he succeeded. And I think that's the same, you know, in this case, with not getting into Bunbury and getting injured, I feel like those setbacks so far have really helped me. Because at that point, you know, I'd always been the best cricketer at Bedford School, at Rushmore, at Bedford Cricket Club, at Bedfordshire, at Northants, under 15s. I'd always been, everywhere I was the best cricketer. And all of a sudden, I'm not even, you know, we go to Bunbury and I'm not even the best cricketer in Midlands, let alone England. I'm not even in the top 15, 20. So that's basically what, you know, how I saw the information that I got. So for me, it was a sign that I needed to work harder. And it was a sign that, you know, okay, that if you think that's how it is, that's fine, but we'll see. And in a few years' time, we'll see where all the other people that got in are and where I am at. So that, like I said, it was a leveler and it was something I needed. And definitely, I've been a character that if something goes my way, doesn't go my way, then I'll always get motivated by that. I'll never, you know, back away and go on my shell. I'll always, you know, want to bounce back. So, yeah, I think that definitely has been a catalyst, as you said, in my career.
Fair play, Emilio. And I'll tell you what, resilience, it's such a key characteristic and trait, isn't it, in the world of cricket, not just in batting or bowling, but again, in life in general. It really is having those adversities, those setbacks, those knockbacks, but having the ability to, you know, almost just take it, absorb it, and come back and fight stronger. It's some great advice. I mean, for someone who is just 21 years of age, it's very, very wise words, to say the least, Emilio, for any young and upcoming cricketers in England and Wales, and indeed on a more global scale as well. But in terms of Northants, I suppose we have to talk about your debut, because as you said, it was washed out. But that was quite special for the club, not just for Northants, but of course your opposition on the day, Gloucestershire. Now, obviously, both teams were promoted to Division 1, haven't unfortunately been able to experience that due to the new format and, of course, COVID in 2020. But what do you remember from that debut? What do you remember about being handed your Northants cap in the first place?
I remember getting the message first on the group chat. Rob Newton was injured. And I remember the message saying on debut, and I remember getting that feeling of, wow, I'm going to make my debut. It wasn't a thing where, you know, you found out the night before the morning of the game. It was a few days before, so I had time to kind of comprehend, you know, what was going on, etc. And my memories were, to be honest, I remember we played Gloucester and they signed Shannon Gabriel. And I just, West Indies had a game against India a couple months before. And I think I saw him bounce out Virat Kohli or something. The pitch wasn't great, but he bounced out Virat Kohli and he bowls 90 mile per hour. And, you know, as a kid at 19, who's not really experienced any of that in twos cricket, I remember into the game thinking, you know, this is going to be a test. It's someone, Shannon Gabriel was very quick. And it's, I feel like there's quite a lot of thought around him. Which looking back, you know, I feel like that's not the way to go. But I feel like at the time, there was a lot of talk about him. Because for me, when you take that step up, you know, the difference between 83 mile per hour and 90 mile per hour is a big difference. So for me, it was a bit nerves around that. But I did a lot of practice leading up to it. And then really, I think as soon as the game started, you know, I had a few friends and family come down to Bristol, but we obviously bowled I don't know, I think we had them six down or so, but two sessions at most, I think. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't much cricket played. I remember getting my catch at square leg, the most easiest of catches of all time. I think it was Ryan Higgins of Brace while I was bowling. And I almost dropped it because it was such an easy catch. It came so slowly. And I was so nervous. I just didn't want to drop it. And I almost dropped it. So I remember that, which was nice, getting that out of the way. But after that, really, it was all just almost celebrations because we got promoted. It rained for 3 days. And it was almost just like, yeah, it was the last game of the season. So it was like my debut, which is really professional and important and has to be focused and switched on. Yeah, you know, we're going out on day three for food and celebrating basically a promotion. So it was kind of weird to get that. Yeah, we're promoted, but also switch on. But then it's raining all day tomorrow, so we're not going to play. But I still need to make sure I'm ready if we do play. It was kind of a weird 4 days, but it was enjoyable. It was a great moment for the club to get promoted. And it will be always a moment where, like you said, sorry, presenting my cap, that was a very good moment for me. And actually, it was presented by Phil Rowe, who was the academy director when I got into the academy. So it was nice to get my cap from him. My parents rushed down from Bedford. They're a bit late, but yeah, it was all a nice feeling. Getting my cap, I think, was probably the most special thing. You know, because I think that's a moment where no matter what happens from here, no one can take that away from me. I've got my cap. I am a professional cricketer now. I've got a contract and I've made my debut in a first class game. That's something that no one can take away from me. And I remember shaking his hand, taking the cap, putting it on and thinking, you know, that's something that will be with me forever. So yeah, it was a great feeling. But it was annoying as well because it was the last game of the season. I couldn't bat. I wanted to bat and get some more cricket. So yeah, it was a bit of a weird 4 days, to say the least.
Yeah, I think I'd describe it as quite a unique debut, to be honest. I'm not sure that we've had anyone have a debut quite like that on the podcast, to be honest, where you haven't batted. You've taken a catch, fair play. You did remember it's Ryan Higgins as well, spot on, got him out for four. But it is a weird debut, isn't it? Basically, a two-session washout where both teams were promoted. And of course, there was a nice photo. I think Gloucestershire put it up on their social media of both sides in the dressing room, obviously celebrating each other's promotion.
That was at the end. And that was another weird moment because I don't really see, this is the thing. So obviously Northants are not big drinkers, but you know, they've got some players that like a drink. And this is obviously a great time to drink. You know, you've promoted, the game's finished, last game of the season. And Gloucester and Northants were all drinking together and doing all these things and enjoying themselves. And I remember really from the last day is because I don't really drink. I don't really drink. And especially at that time, I didn't really drink at all. And all the Northants players were trying to get me to drink because we were promoted. But I was just sat there drinking my orange juice, I think, just watching everyone go bonkers. But I think, you know, it was a weird and unique debut, but like I said, that's all I remember really from the last day was everyone just drinking and partying and living it up, and I was just sat there almost, you know, just watching what was going on, you know, just observing from the sides. But it was a special day and a special moment.
Absolutely, Emilio, it was. It really was, and again, it was quite well. Again, we come back to that word, unique. I can't think that I've seen anything quite like that in county cricket before, to be honest. And it was a lovely moment, but. Yeah. I suppose the downside of that came in 2020, and this is just a follow-up question to that about Division 1, because of course it is prestigious. Playing in Division 1 in the County Championship, we all know what that means, not just to players or fans, but like the County Championship is an illustrious tournament, and to play in Division 1 really can be a career highlight for a lot of players. Do you wish in hindsight, obviously we can't change anything, we can't, you know, change anything about 2020, we can't go back into the past and alter things, but do you wish that Northants would have had that chance to play in Division 1, or are you happy to play the County Championship in its current structure and format?
That's a good question, actually. I think I see it from two sides. I think, yes, I do wish that we had the opportunity to play in Div 1, 100%. And I do hope we get that opportunity, whether it's next year. I don't know if they'll go back to it. But I definitely do hope we do. And I definitely wish we did get that opportunity because, like you said, it's prestigious. And, you know, the quality of sides each game is just unbelievably high. It's great cricket. It's the pinnacle of county cricket.
It is.
But at the same time, I think it's been a good opportunity in the sense, obviously last year we only had 5 games to play, but it's a good opportunity for youngsters to play, to get a good blend of you're playing against Somerset, you know, one of the top Div 1 sides, and then you're playing against it could be a Glamorgan or Leicester or Derby who aren't necessarily a Div 1 top team. And I think it's that balance for youngsters can be a good thing. It can be a good thing. I think from that perspective, it can be a good thing. And it can, but, you know, from a youngster's perspective. But I do think, I do want us to be playing Div 1. You know, the competitiveness, the relentlessness, the quality all around the board, and just the fact that Northants, you know, I think the last time we got to Div 1, we went straight back down, I believe. And I'd love to go to Div 1 and compete, because I really believe, I've said this for a while, as a Red Bull side, we are capable of competing with the top Div 1 teams. I really believe that. So I would love to put that theory or that belief to test over the course of a whole year. So yeah, to answer your question, I would probably say I would prefer Div 1, but who knows where we'll go next year.
Well, exactly, yeah. We don't really know, to be honest, for the time being, but I think that's more than understandable. And again, I have posed that question to both Gloucestershire and Northants players, because, again, as you said, to have the opportunity to play in Division 1, it can be a career highlight, the intensity of the games, the superstars they get to play against. And it's just the, as I said, the prestigious and illustrious nature of Division 1. There is something very, very special about it, I suppose, for county cricketers. But I suppose with this new format, as you said, it has given youngsters a new opportunity. You're also playing teams which may necessarily have played before as well. Think about Yorkshire, Lancashire. And as you rightfully said, Emilio, Northants this season have been incredibly competitive. They really, really have. And you've got a fantastic team, the likes of yourself, Vasconcelos, Gareth Berg, Rob Keogh, Ben Sanderson, who deserves a lot more credit in the county circuit as a whole. That man is an absolute machine when it comes to Red Bull bowling.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
But it would be interesting. And I do hope, I sincerely hope for both Northants and, of course, Gloucestershire, that those two teams do get a chance in Division 1, because they earned it. They did earn it in 2019. But I suppose, as we mentioned here, we'll have to wait and see how that does pan out heading into the future. But talking of the championship this year, Emilio, I alluded to it beforehand, a certain knock, okay, in this year's competition against Kent. Now, what do you remember from that day? And of course, the moment itself, lifting that bat, lifting your helmet, scoring your maiden, your first ever first-class century. What do you remember from that occasion?
Wow, I remember quite a lot, actually. I remember a lot. I remember getting a call to say I'm playing, because I was out for 6 games, I think. Maybe 5. But I was out for quite a few games after Lancs. I remember getting the call to say I'm back in the side and put in specific training, because I knew who I was going to be facing. And I think the first thing I can really remember is walking to the ground and remembering that the crowds are back in. That was the first game for me, because we played, that was my first game back, because Lancs was still behind closed doors in the second game of the season. So that was the first game back that I played that crowds were in, and it was my first ever game with crowds, because last year was all behind closed doors. My debut was basically washed out, and we played 2 sessions and bowled, and no one was really there. This was my first game, and this was sold out at Kent, basically, all 4 days. So I remember that, and I remember saying to Tom Taylor, actually, it's my first game with crowds, did you know that? And he said, well, big players step up in big games or something like that. And he said, go and get 100. And I remember we were laughing, saying that'd be nice, wouldn't it? I remember that well. I think that was all another new experience for me, playing in front of crowds, because like I said, last year was all behind closed doors. I mean, half this season was. And then I remember, you know, batting, I think 55 not out at lunch. And I've always said, if I get to 30, I'm a tough man to stop. You know, if I get out, it's normally early. If I get to 25, 30, if I'm in, normally I go on. So once I got to 30, 40, 50, I was fine. I was nervous, really nervous up top. And yeah, I remember, I think I was on about 85. And I think I looked up on the scoreboard thinking, I'm going to get 100 there. And I got really nervous thinking, wow, are you going to get 100? Like, all, I know all the stuff that comes with it, you know, the messages, the all of that. So I tried to stay in my bubble, and I had Luke Proctor come down, I think at 90, basically telling me to calm down because I started getting really pushy, a bit jerky, driving balls I would leave. You know what I mean? I was just kind of going out of my bubble. And I think I was in 97. Jack Leaning was bowling. And that was really smart for Ken, actually, because I got him out in the first game of the year, bowling my cannon fodder. I got him out on 70, and he bowled, and he had everyone up, and it was kind of like a battle between me and him. And he bowled, and I played this horrible drive, and I kind of was like a thick edge. It could have gone anywhere. Luckily, it went for two, but that could have been out. And as soon as that went in the gap, and I hit two, I knew I was going to be 100. So I remember getting my single, getting 100, and there was quite a healthy round of applause. And for me, yeah, lifting my bat and my helmet and stuff and soaking that moment in was a moment I really will never forget. I remember the shot. I remember running to. I remember the feeling. I remember everything about it. The only thing I wish my parents were there, but they couldn't get any tickets because it was sold out. But yeah, I remember it very well. It was a moment, like I said, I'll never forget. I've worked for. But at the same time, I should have carried on. I would never stop saying that. I should have carried on. I played another bad shot to Jack Leaning. So it was definitely something that was a good moment for me, but it was bittersweet because I should have carried on. So, but I think I'll allow myself a bit of slack because it was my first one.
Well, yeah, exactly. But that is the typical batsman's mindset, isn't it? Of course, you want to kick on. You want to get the 150. You want to get the 200. Once you've reached those three figures, but I'll tell you what, yeah. Some knock. I think there was 15 or 16 fours in there and a six, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
There's not normally a six on my scorecards either, so I was happy with that. I was very happy with that. But yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate that. It was one of those days which kind of all clicked and I was in good form. Had a clear game plan. And, you know, like I said, it was one of those days. So as a cricketer, as a sportsman, I guess you're always looking for those. So you perform best when your head's clear, your mind's clear, you're playing on instinct. And I think that was one of the days where I was doing that.
100%. I remember this from The Edge. I'm not sure if anyone has seen this. It's a documentary about England, you know, late 2000s, 2010 side, and Jonathan Trott. And there's that wonderful piece of imagery where it's just him alone in a field. And that's almost the description of how he went about his batting, just having that clear mindset. And that's when Trotty also played at his best. So interesting to learn that, Emilio. Interesting to learn that. But again, it's a good approach to have to the game of cricket to almost get rid of all the white noise and, you know, just focus on every single ball. I know it's very, very cliche, but that is how you succeed in this game. But
yeah,
in terms of this season, Emilio, before we get into teammates, of course, that'll be a nice way to wrap up today's episode. Yeah. I just want to know, in your words, how would you describe your season in 2021? Because again, we've seemed to mention you once every two episodes here on the podcast. It's just been big knock after big knock. You've had the 84 not out as well to win a game for Northants in the Royal London One Day Cup. You've made your T20 Blast debut against my county of Warwickshire, which we did win, of course, at Edge Pass, and I was there for that. Yeah. But in terms of the season as a whole, putting it all into perspective, and of course, we've still got Super September still to come, how would you describe your season in your own words?
Okay. If I could describe it in one word, I'd say okay.
That's surprising.
Yeah. I'm disappointed I missed as many Red Bull games as I did. I played the first two, got a couple of really good balls from good players, Mahmood and Stevens, I think, about two. And I missed the next, I think it was five games I missed. And that was disappointing. I was scoring runs, loads of runs in the twos, and then came back and then obviously got my score, my 100. And then I think I got a couple of starts against Glamorgan and Yorkshire, got a couple of 20s. And then the Royal London One Day Cup started. That was nice. I think the positive for me is, you know, the 50 over stuff, playing that, because at the start of the year, I was seen as a Rebel player. And now I'm playing, well, at least two formats. I'm opening the batting in the 50 over stuff. And I got a couple of scores in that. So that's something that I'm definitely happy with. But I'm someone that sets unbelievably high standards of myself. And I feel like if I look back on the Red Bull season I've had, yes, it's not helped. I've missed 5 games. That's not ideal. But I still feel like there could be another 200s in there and should have been. The work I put in and the ability I have and the standards I set, it's where I'm never really content. So that's where I feel like that's something that ask me again in a month and after these 4 games and that okay could go to, yeah, it's been very good. I'm not going to sit here and go, it's been a very good season because there's still 4 games left. I could go out and average 5. I could go out and average 75. So for me, it's almost like, yeah, it's been okay. But for me, like I said, the scoring 100 at Kent and getting second team runs and getting winning an 85 match winning knock is something that I kind of expect of myself. So it's not something that I get too high up on about, if that makes sense. But there's still 4 games left. We'll see what happens after those games.
We will indeed, Emilio. We will indeed. Again, it's about keeping that even keel, not resting on your laurels. There's always room for improvement. And yeah, as I said, I respect that. I quite like that attitude and that mentality and that approach to the game because, again, you know you've got the talent, but there's always a higher ceiling that you can reach. The sky's the limit, as we said earlier in today's podcast. And that just reminds me of a quote that I did have to write down. This was from the cricket paper in 2019. And I just want to know your thoughts on this, Emilio. You said, I want to play for England, but I want to be one of the best batsmen out there. The Roots, the Williamsons, the Coleys, the Smiths. That's always been my goal. I'm guessing that's still very much the case, to say the least.
Yeah, a 1,000,000% is. I would say that. I'd also go as far as saying I want to change the way cricket is perceived. I feel like cricket is it's a great sport. I think it's the second most popular, worldwide popular sport in terms of number of viewers. But I feel like the effect that cricket has compared to, for example, football, if you look around now, and you look at global superstars, Anthony Joshua's, Lewis Hamilton's, it could be anyone, Mbappe's, LeBron James, Tom Brady's. If they walk down Oxford Street, what happens? Everyone's around them. They're big names. They're doing great things for the sport. And I feel like cricket has always lacked that element a little bit. I feel like KP had it, Jane Warne had it, but I feel right now. I feel like, Ben Stokes is kind of there. He's kind of there. But I just feel like I want to make cricket a bit more accessible to everyone. I feel like it's almost seen as a rich, private school sport. And I feel like I want to change that. I feel like I want to be something that, everyone can look up to and go from any background or anything. I feel like it's a sport that potentially lacks in that department in terms of accessibility. Maybe that's a bit harsh, but I do believe that. So I do want to be, to answer your question, the Root, the Smith, the Williamsons, the Coleys. I do. That's the standard I set. And I do believe I can get there. And I believe there's no point in playing the game if I'm not trying to get there. I might as well retire now because that's the standard I should be aiming for. And I think that's why, I look back at the season this year and go, it could have been better because realistically, where I'm trying to get to, I'm good enough to be scoring hundreds relatively consistently for Northants, not, one or two a season. So that's, I think, why I'm setting myself high standards anyway.
Well, again, Emilio, I respect that. I really do. And I've got no doubt that you'll achieve that. I really don't. Success, not just for Northants, but potentially international cricket as well. You got all the earmarks for it. It's just, we all know how international cricket works, though. It's a case of, peaking at the right time, isn't it? Having that opening opportunity come about. But tell you what, mate, you definitely got the mentality. You got the temperament. You got the technique. You got the skills. Could just be a matter of time, Emilio. So just for myself and, of course, us here at TCCP, wishing you nothing but the very best of luck, mate. Really, really do. Not just for Super September, but 2022 and beyond. I mean, we here are definitely looking forward to seeing your continued progression. We think you're an absolute superstar, mate. So good luck. And just know you've always got our support here at the County Cricket Podcast.
Thank you very much.
Hey, no problems, Emilio, no problems. But that's kind of our main segment of the podcast done, okay, the main course. But of course, here at TCCP, We do have your after dinner special. Your desserts, something nice to wrap up today's episode on. And that is, of course, TCCP teammates. So just for the new listeners out there who don't know how this works, basically, I've got a selection of questions for Emilio to answer about the Northamptonshire teammates they shared a dressing room with at Wantage Road. So Emilio Gay, are you ready for TCCP teammates?
Yeah, of course. Always ready.
Fantastic. Now, we get off to quite a strong start on today's episode. A classic here at TCCP. Who's the teacher's pet down at Wantage Road? Who's always hanging around the coaches, per se?
Oh, the teacher's pet. I would have to say Tom Taylor. I think Tom Taylor is... I'd have to say Tom Taylor. I think he's one of those guys where... I think it's almost like he's a little bit living in luxury. You know, he's got... the coaches like him and, and rightly so, he's a great player and got a good attitude. But I think, he's around the coaches a lot. So I'd say him and potentially Ricardo as well, because, he has been captaining the side. He's, obviously Northampton's a special player. So I think probably those two kind of can get away with murder a little bit at Wantage Road. I'd probably say,
Yeah, definitely some apt choices there, I reckon, Emilio.
Yeah,
Tom's a lovely fella. I must admit, we've had him on the podcast. I still remember him breaking my heart in 2020, though, at Edgbaston. 50 on his debut, and then Graham White getting 37 from, I think, 14 balls. Or
that was an unbelievable game. I remember watching it and just turned it off. It just turned off. I just thought, we were getting smacked. There's no point. We end up winning. I saw the group chat and I said, well done, boys. And I thought, what? Well done. Fact. I'll check it. And Graham White's turned into Aaron Finch and Tom Taylor's turned into Virat Kohli and we've won the game. So, yeah. But, yeah, that was a great game.
If you're a Northants fan, if you're a Bears fan like me afterwards, on G. Tempertel's final game as well. Thank you, Tom. Cheers for that, mate. I'll always remember that. But no, he's a great, great player. Great lad as well. I like Tom Taylor. Yeah. Very, very good. And model professional, I must admit. But moving on to our next question then, Emilio. Who's Mr. Hard as Nails at Wantage Road? Who wouldn't you want to mess with necessarily?
Luke Proctor straight away. Yeah, Luke Proctor. 1,000,000%. We always get into these little, as jokes, because I'm a big boxing fan. We always used to tend to get into these little positions where we're kind of just saying, bring it on kind of thing as a joke, but no, I'd never mess with him. Luke Proctor's tough. It's not just, physically, but even in cricket, if he gets hit or anything, he's just rock hard. It's mental. I think, maybe it's his upbringing. I'm not sure what it is, but he just always wants to get into a battle with the ball. And then outside of that, he's just hard as nails. I think as soon as you said that, he went to mind. He's not the biggest of guys either. He's not that big, he's not tall, and he's not that, not that muscular, but he's just hard, isn't it? He's almost crazy a little bit. He almost wants to fight everyone. So probably Luke Proctor.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Scrappy little terrier. That's how I describe Luke Proctor. But as you said, loves to get into the heat of the battle.
It's not the dog in the fight, it's the fight of the dog, something like that. I think that's how I describe Luke Proctor.
Good way of describing him. It is a very, very good way of describing him.
Yeah.
Moving on to our next question then, Emilio. Who's the dressing room DJ at Wantage Road and what are their choices, their go-to choices of song?
Dressing room DJ. I get it a little bit. I do it a little bit, or I'd say Brandon Glover.
The Camel.
Brandon Glover, yeah. Big, yeah, Camel. I'd say Brandon Glover. And Rob Keir, them two. All potentially, I'd say us three get it the most. But I'd say, Brandon Glover or... In the gym, it's normally Brandon Glover or Rob Keir. Brandon... It's weird because it's almost like, our change room's divided in what music we like. I like very different music to what Ben Sanderson likes. If I put on music, Sander would just say, this is crap or something, get it off. Whereas Brandon kind of caters for everyone, which is, I think, why he gets the most. It's a lot of R&B, hip hop, some house music as well, just stuff like that. It's kind of everywhere. But yeah, I'd probably say him the most in the gym. He likes to put on some house music in the gym, just to get us all going. But I'm not a fan of it. So I try and take it when I can. But there's very few people that like my music.
What is your choice of music, Emilio?
Well, I'd say very few people. It's more just the standard R&B, or, you know, it could be Drake, Dave, Chris Brown, anything like that. But yeah, I think they like a bit more. Sander, for example, likes country music, stuff like that. And The Gambler, Kenny Rogers, stuff like that. You know, it's just different cultural music, isn't it? I think. Yeah, it's different music. I don't know how to describe it. It's weird. It's almost like I like a lot of rap and, you know, R&B and stuff, and they almost like house music, and it's just culturally different, I think. But yeah, I'd say Brandon Glover and Rob Keir for sure.
Yeah, fair enough. Dressing room DJs then, like Daft Punk, I suppose, down at Northants. Moving on to our next one then, Emilio. Again, very much musically themed. Who's the karaoke king down at Northamptonshire? And again, what is their go-to choice of song?
Oh, karaoke king. I don't know. Maybe, you know who was? I would say Parnell was, Wayne Parnell was quite, I would say, you know, if we were to have karaoke, he'd be one of the first people up, I would say. He was quite outgoing. Yeah. Well, I'd say Wayne Parnell probably. I'm trying to think of anyone else. We have this thing where if you, the first time you're in the bus, you have to put up a song and sing in front of the whole bus. So I think that's a good indication of, you know, people, where people are at. So I did Fresh Prince of Bel-Air in Bristol. I sung along to that. Yeah, got everyone going. Everyone was kind of a bit drunk as well, which helps. But yeah, I'd probably say Wayne Parnell, but him or actually Josh Cobb probably, especially after a few drinks, 1,000,000% Josh Cobb. He's very extroverted and just kind of, you know, after a few drinks, you never really know what he's going to do. So he's not too shy. But yeah, I'd probably say Parnie or Cobby if I had to pick anyone.
Fair enough. I quite like your choice there, actually, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah. Can't really go wrong, can you? I think everyone knows that, and it's just, yeah, it's catchy, I think. I was very nervous as well, but looking back, I don't think anyone can remember it. Everyone was drunk, so it was the end of the game on the way back, so I picked the right time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And as you said, at least it was a good song as well. It wasn't like some absolutely rogue one that no one had a clue about. At least people know that one. Or moving on to our next one, Emilio, very much cricket related, relatively new here on TCCP actually, but has got some pretty strange responses so far. Who do you say is the most likely to get timed out during a game? Who's very slow getting their kit on?
Me. 1,000,000%. 1,000,000% me. I'd say me. The amount of times me and Vasco were out to bat in the 50 over stuff, and Vasco has to come back in and say, Emilio, everyone's out. And I'm literally, I put headphones in sometimes, taking my headphones out and putting on my gloves and rushing out. I'd probably say, genuinely, it would be me. I'm not very good with timekeeping, to be honest. I leave everything last minute. So I would say it would be me. But if it wasn't to be me, I would probably say Charlie Thurston, purely because, and I don't see anyone do this, Charlie Thurston will be next into bat and he will only have his thigh pads and box on. So he will have his pads. He won't have his pads on. They'll be like sat next to him, and his gloves and his bat and everything else will just be on the bench, and he'll just be sat there with just thigh pads on and box on. And normally you pad up, but he just doesn't want to pad up. He's worried, I think, he'll get pad rash if like they bat forever. So he waits until a wicket goes, and then he basically pads up. It's mental. So I'd probably say Charlie Thurston as well. Us two are probably the worst.
It's funny you mentioned Charlie. His name has cropped up multiple times, and I don't think I've ever heard of someone living that dangerously in cricket in my life.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I've never really asked him why. I think he said it's because, yeah, if they bat forever, he's just got his pads on for ages, so he just waits until there's a wicket. But, you know, at a ground like, for example, Glamorgan, when there's a long walk, you know, you're really cutting it fine. But, yeah, I'd probably say us two.
Yeah, fair enough. See, app choices again. Fair enough. But yeah, Charlie Thurston, if you're listening to today's episode, I'd love to know why, because I just get too anxious doing that.
Yeah,
imagine if a wicket falls and you've got to get all your kit together like that. As you said as well, Glamorgan, Derby's another one with a long walk.
Yeah, I couldn't do that.
It's not the right way to prepare for before an innings, but hey, each of their own, I suppose. That's what cricket's all about, individuals playing a team sport. Moving on to our next one then, Emilio. This is the classic one. It's the big one here at CCCP. Who are the best and worst dressed at Wattage Road?
Best dressed? I'd obviously say myself for that. You could back yourself, but excluding me, best dressed for sure, two people. Or one person, Rob Keir, for sure. I think so. 1,000,000%. I like his clothes. He knows his designer stuff. 1,000,000%. I don't know if he's watching this, but I would say Rob Keir. I don't want him to hear that. I would never tell him that. But it is Rob Keir, as much as I hate to admit it. Rob Keir, worst dressed. Wow. That's brutal. But I'm not sure. I'd say it's between Ben Curran and Charlie Thurston. Yeah, between Ben Curran and Charlie Thurston. Charlie just wears plain stuff, no flavour, just plain stuff. When I've seen him, just basic stuff. Ben is the opposite. Ben will wear rogue stuff, like just rogue stuff. He's Ben Curran. He needs to wear, he can't be the same as everyone else. So he just wears rogue stuff, could be anything. Bizarre, fur white coats or white jeans or, I don't know, pink tops or anything. Ben needs to wear what he needs to wear. He's just got, highlights in his hair just done. He looks like Jake Paul, we've been saying, but he just does some rogue stuff, yeah. But I'd say Ben Curran and Charlie Thurston, to that. Just don't tell him I said that, because he will have me. So don't tell him. But yeah, I'll probably say that too. Rob Keogh, definitely the best in my opinion.
I can't believe you've just likened Ben Curran to Jake Paul.
Genuinely, we're calling him Jake Paul because he's dyed his hair. He's got highlights in his hair, and he looks when he comes out of the showers. He's got it forward. It looks, we were calling him Jake Paul, but he doesn't like it. But who cares? That's what you call him.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, it's a quality nickname, I must admit. As I said, I can't believe you'd call him that. I can see it though. Yeah. I can see it. And the current boys do like to lock into the hair, like, don't that. They?
Yeah, they are like that. For sure, I'd say he's up there.
Well, it's funny we've been mentioning nicknames there, actually, Emilio, because guess what the next question is? Best nickname. So who has the best nickname down at Wanted Road?
That's a good question. I like that question. Ben Curran is up there for sure. He's got Rexy. I don't know if you've heard that. He's got Rexy. Rexy is T-Rex because with Ben, his arms, I kid you not, are so short and like they come in like this. So most people's arms, they extend out. Ben's don't extend out. They're just kind of like, they just stay here and they don't extend. They're just like really short and small. So we call him Rexy for T-Rex. We've got Brandon Glover as Camel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't actually know. Rob Keogh used to call him Camel and it just stuck. I think it's because he's incredibly like just moody. I'm not sure if a camel is just like, portrays moodiness, but he's just he's an incredibly angry bowler. Just like I think it's because he's got the hump the whole time. When he bowls, I think that's what it is. But now I'm saying it must be what it is. But I think when he bowls, he's the angriest bowler ever. So I think it's because he's got the hump the whole time. I think, so Camel, Rexy, I think I'd say them two, Brandon Glover and Ben Curran for sure. I'm trying to think of anyone else, but I think I'd say them. I get called Trials because I used to, I said that, people joke about it, but I said I could have turned pro in football as a kid. I had trials at these clubs. And then basically every time we play football in the warm-ups, they basically they say I'm rubbish and all of this, and they call me trials. They think I'm awful at football, but I just think, again, it's a bit jealousy. But you know, we'll leave that for another day. But yeah, I think definitely Ben Curran and Brandon Glover. Brandon Glover, camel, 1,000,000%. He's the angriest bowler I've ever witnessed when he bowls. He bowls quick as well, so you don't want to tick him off. But yeah, them two.
Mm, fair enough. We had Brandon on as one of our first guests, actually. And again, I was quite surprised just how nice he was, because as you said, on the field, really, really fiery, really good, just belt it in, very intimidating bowler. But he was so softly spoken and really nice as well. Like, he's a completely different character off the field, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a lover. I get on really well with him. But yeah, when he's got a ball in his hand, yeah, you don't wanna mess with him, because he's got a short fuse, to say the least. So I'd say he is a lovely guy, but you don't want to get on the wrong side of him. He's supposed to be quicker as well, which is, when you're batting, it's not really what you want. So you just try and be as nice as you can to him.
Yeah, but yeah, any batsmen out there, do not sledge Brandon Glover. Don't get in his face. Yeah. Just absorb it. Move on to the next bowler.
Yeah.
Crikey. Yeah, good bowler, though. I do like Brandon. But it's funny you mention their football, to be honest, Emilio, because our next question is best footballer. And judging by that description, trials, it sounded like, do you know the in-betweeners? Jay from the in-betweeners. Yeah. Trials at West Ham.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Worst footballer I don't even think about is Ben Curran. So that, I'm going to answer that. I don't need to think about that. Ben Curran. And I guarantee if you ask everyone in the squad apart from Ben Curran, I'd say Ben Curran. Best footballer. If you're going off stats in terms of, you know, we play a game called Pig. I'm not sure if you're aware of what it is. In the mornings, games and training. It's a football game, basically. And we've got a table. And the one who gets it the least is always, who never really loses, I'd say Rob Keogh is good. Wayne Parnell was very good. He's left now, obviously. But Wayne Parnell was very good, and Rob Keogh, I'd say they're the two. The worst, for sure, Charlie Thurston, Ben Curran. And I think he was really bad that he's left, was Blessing Musrabani. That man could not play football. He could bowl, but he could not play football. Those three were dreadful. But to answer your best question, I'd say it's Rob Keogh. I keep bringing him up here, but yeah, I think the standard's not great. So Rob Keogh is probably the best in the work in a bad bunch, I'd say.
Tell you what, I would love to see a five-a-side tournament with those five in the same team.
Oh no,
Rob Keogh, Parnell, Blessing, Charlie.
Yeah, Blessing. He's nah. We actually had a good, going to nicknames, we had a good nickname, Blessing. We called him the Zimbabwean Gypsy King because he's 6'9".
What, Fury?
Yeah. Fury 6'9". And Blessing 6'9". And we used to call him the Zimbabwean Gypsy King. That was a good nickname. I do miss that. But yeah, he was crap. He was terrible at football. But, yeah, the best probably Rob Keogh. The standard's dreadful there. It's bad. But you know, it's good fun, isn't it? You need football. You can't play cricket without football. No. You need football in the world. Exactly.
You do. The only problem with it is the injuries, but I suppose if you can mitigate those, it is a good warm up, isn't it? Get you into the competitive spirit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 100%. It's perfect. But you can't play games because of injuries, so we have to play Pig, which is just basically like in a circle, like, you know, one touch, one bounce, a little bit like that kind of thing. But yeah, it gets competitive juices going. It's great fun.
Yeah, it does. We've had a lot of football stories here on the podcast, to say the least. It's a fantastic warm-up, and yeah, hopefully, obviously, you do get to continue it heading into the next few years. But moving on to our final question, Emilio. And again, I think this has just actually come to an end, but it is technically summer, so we do still have it for our summer editions of TCCP. Right. Who in the Northamptonshire dressing room would be the most likely to appear on Love Island?
I need to say that. We actually had this conversation a few weeks ago. I would say, excluding myself, Can you include yourself in these? You can. I would say myself. But if you're excluding myself, I would say closely behind me is Rob Keogh, Ben Curran, and Brandon Glover. I would probably say, if you pushed me, I'd probably say Ben Curran. Yeah, he thinks he's the best thing since sliced bread, I think. I think he backs himself. So Ben Curran. Brandon Glover, very good looking chap, but he lacks in the personality department, we reckon. We you know, we always say he's, girls love looking at him, but as soon as he starts talking, they just lose interest. So I don't think he would go on. I think he'd have to be Ben Curran. Brandon, yeah, he's not really got the chat, I don't think, for that. We tell him. It's not like me snaking him out. We tell him. So I'd probably say Ben Curran would go on 100%. And you never know, he might do one day. Who knows? I think he wants to, but maybe a winter pre-season.
Oh, yeah. ITV, if you're listening, Ben Curran or Emilio, get your representatives in touch. Love Island. Would be interesting, wouldn't it, I suppose? But we'll have to wait and see. If not, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. That's always on in the winter, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think that is a fantastic way to wrap up what has been a thoroughly engrossing episode of the County Cricket Podcast, Emilio. So before we end today's episode, mate, do you just have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, for example?
No. I've not really got anything to promote. I'd say, as many people watching, you know, is Northants, obviously, is my team, and the support we get, I think, you know, this year has been brilliant. Like, you know, yourself and everyone that's watching my innings, but also everyone else's performances, I think it's been really good and refreshing to see for a smaller county. So I'd say it's been good to see Northants going up in that sense and promoting the county, which we all have done this year. I think that's been refreshing. But I think the only way is up, and hopefully the county can go from strength to strength. I think that'd probably be it from me.
Fair enough, Emilio. And you know what? I can completely concur with that sentiment. As we mention on every single episode, just continue to support the counties, whether that's in person by buying a ticket, whether that's with the live streams, radio commentary, even just following them on social media, you know, just a click of a button, something which you can do for free, retweeting clips, sharing stuff. It really does help maintain and sustain our county system here in England and Wales. But Emilio, all that I have left to say is thank you very much for today. It's been an absolute pleasure. I hope you're always welcome back here on the Cows Cricket Podcast. If you want to come on during the off season, mate, there's always a slot available for you to come on and chat all things cricket. But that's it from myself for today. To all of the listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.